Hi, this is Don Peterson, along with my co-host, Kevin Payne, and we're here for the Chronic Life Podcast. Excited with the topics we've been doing. This one in particular is near and dear to my heart. It's about patient advocacy, and advocacy is a big word. I think it has four syllables, so it's big, almost as big as delicatessen. but it's a four-syllable word that really is about how do you get through dealing with the system and your physician, everything else that you go through while you're dealing with your condition that affects you as a person, financially, your insurance companies, the nurses you talk to, your family, everything else. How do you advocate for yourself when you're diagnosed with a severe condition? So we're humble people. We don't like to overtalk others. We want to be polite. Our doctors can sometimes be very intimidating to talk to. And so we're going to talk today about, you know, how you deal with those things and how you speak up for yourself. And Kevin, you know, why don't people speak up? What holds us back?
Because we're individuals, we tend to look at individual reasons for why we don't tend to speak up. So, for example, you mentioned maybe being humble or maybe being intimidated or things like that. And those are factors. And those are factors for some people more than they are for others. But for all of us, I want us to look at the environment that we're walking into. And there are two things about the environment of us as patients interfacing with the healthcare system. And that may be with physicians or nurse practitioners or getting on the phone and trying to deal with your insurance company or whatever it is. And one is that everything about the system is imbalanced. You've got no advantages going into this.
No leverage.
No leverage whatsoever.
Not at all. Yeah.
And it's a bit mysterious for many of us as well. So we're walking into somebody else's playing field, and they've got the home field advantage.
Right. And if we tell ourselves, though, that we're not competent or that we don't understand the system that we've been thrust into, then it seems to me that then the system is really primed to take advantage of you. And it not in a favorable way. You know?
No, that's true.
I think that, well, one of the reasons I wanted to do this episode is that while I was at Infusion Express, in the first couple of years when I had time, I literally had a stack of patient charts on my desk. And I tried very hard, because I'm not a clinician at all, to stay out of the clinical matters as relates to our patients. However, I did get involved in the financial matters related to our patients, because their inability to pay or to understand the bill they were getting and why the bill was so high or why it was what it was, or just getting answers about prior authorizations and things like that, those were difficult for folks. And so I endeavored to help them as best I could by advocating on their behalf with, you know, whomever they who were having struggles with. We think of the system, I think, and we think of it as, because we were sick, right, and we have a condition, that the system itself will be more compassionate towards us and understanding. And I think what I'd like to talk about and explore is, I'm sure the individuals within the system are compassionate people. I think, you know, I'd like to believe that all people are good and caring. But why does the system, you know, treat us so shortly and with so little compassion as it seems to treat us with? And what can we do about those things? As the sort of injured party here, you can adopt a victim sort of mentality fairly quickly, and you need to rise above that somehow and advocate for yourself. And, you know, maybe, Kevin, we can talk a little bit about why do we feel this victim status and why can it be debilitating?
Yeah, we'll be getting to that. One of the other issues I want us to bring out here at the very first is that the other issue about this system is that the rewards aren't aligned. So for us, yeah, we're walking into anything we do where we interact with the healthcare system as patients needing help. But for them, no matter how compassionate they are, it's their job. And they're not measured, they're not paid, they're not, you know, they don't get any rewards based on being compassionate. They have certain marks to hit, and they have to do this. So the rewards are often at cross purposes. And we see that a lot in any kind of social system, but it's particularly difficult, and it's particularly fraught with emotion because it's the healthcare system.
Yeah. Well, I hope in this episode we can get to some details on, you know, how best to talk with your physician, what tactics to use, what mechanisms to use to get them to spend quality time with you and get answers to the questions that are most plaguing you. How to talk to the nurses or staff in their office as you're leaving. If you have questions about how you access care, about your follow-up, about, you know, picking up your prescriptions or whatever it is, you know, who do you stop? How do you talk to them? And then, of course, you know, all of us who have insurance are dealing with whatever constraints that the insurance industry, you know, sort of imposes on us. And, you know, do we understand what does a prior authorization mean? What does a pre-certification mean? Why do we have to have those things? There's a concept called step therapy. If you're suffering with a, you know, chronic condition that may require biologic drug treatment at some point, there's a step or series of steps that you have to take before you're, quote unquote, eligible for those drugs. And, you know, I don't think most people, patients, will really understand that. Because nobody's, it's, you know, it's, and that's the other part of it is whose job is it to tell you those things, right?
Right.
If you ask your doctor, the doctor's going to shrug his or her shoulders and go, I don't know, you know, call your insurance company. And you talk to the pharmacist about why can't I have that drug or why is it so expensive? You know, nobody really has answers for you. And the problem that I think is that what I run into and I've seen people run into are the staff at hospitals or infusion centers or at your doctor's office who seem to be really short with you or give you really, really short answers. My guess is it's not because they don't want to talk to you or it's something personal. And I think in this system, we have to be very, very careful not to take anything that the system imposes on us as personal. Unfortunately, you feel badly sometimes about the way the system treats you, but trust, they're treating everybody that poorly.
Yeah.
And so they're not singling you out. But I'd like to dive into some of those details and how we get to a conversation. Let's start with maybe our physician. How do we get to a conversation with our physician?
Well, let's understand a little bit about the system that we're walking into. And that's really important because if you walk into this with the idea that it's a conversation, or if you walk into this with the idea that it's going to be like other kinds of interactions you have in your life, then you're going to be wrong, and that's going to be frustrating, and it's going to make it a lot more emotional for you, and those things are going to get in your way. So let's talk a little bit about how the system is unbalanced and maybe a little mysterious and what you need to understand. And the first thing is the system is like this, one, because of tradition. They were trained this way. They're doing what they've been trained to do. And after a while, that becomes habit, and they don't even think about it. They're seeing the world from their perspective, just like you do, and that's it. But in a larger sense, these systems are built because it maintains expertise, and it's focused on them efficiently getting through their job. Now, efficiency is really important because it's a business for them. They're getting paid based on how many patients they're getting through the system every day.
What I've found in working in the system is that there's a need for people to be efficient, but what they're lacking is effectiveness.
Right.
So there's always a balance between effectiveness and efficiency. If you did things so quickly that you weren't effectively doing your job, then that's not a good balance, right?
Right.
But unfortunately, the metrics that we measure people by is generally quantitative in terms of how fast, how many, how often, what the frequency was. And what we fail to recognize is how good were we in the moment we were doing that.
We go for the easy metrics. Obviously, healthcare is going through a period right now where they're reevaluating the kinds of metrics that they're using, and we're looking at outcomes-based health and those sorts of things, but we're not there yet. So when you walk into this environment, this is how they've been trained. So it's a strange environment. It's their space. You think of it like a theatrical performance. It's their stage.
Or like a negotiation, right?
Right. And yeah. it's the stage is dressed with all sorts of items that reinforce their expertise, right? You've got diplomas on the wall, you've got medical charts, you've got gizmos and doodads and all of these strange arcane instruments that we're not familiar with, but that reinforce the way they sit in this hierarchy. We also are put at a disadvantage with the timing. So we have to be in place. They're not waiting for us. We're waiting for them. The system is designed for them to have multiple exam rooms that they're cycling through, and the job of their staff is to get you prepared and ready and sitting there waiting so that they can get in and out as quickly as possible.
Right, the efficiency thing. I mean, I think exactly. That, you know, what you just described about how we're on their schedule, they're not on our schedule, I think that's, to me, one of the most frustrating things about the system itself is that they don't mind keeping you waiting, you know, hours at a time, and then spending 2 minutes with you and feeling like they did their job.
Right.
And, you know, any of us who value our time, and I hope everybody who's listening values their time on some scale of value, when the system, in effect, wastes our time or ignores the value of our time the way that they tend to do, that creates a stress and frustration before you've even seen anybody.
Right.
And I understand. I mean, you're talking about, you know, we're changing the way we think about things to more outcomes-based. And I'll tell you, as a person, as an executive who's worked in this industry for the last going on 15 years now, people talk a good game about being patient-centric. And when they say that to me, I go, well, how does that centricity of being more patient-centric manifest itself in different behaviors?
Right.
What do you do differently today that you didn't do before you were more patient-centric? And it's so interesting that the look on their face is like, what do you mean?
It's a deer in the headlights.
What, really? What do you mean? What do right. I mean? What, do you smile more? Do you introduce yourself? Do you, I don't know, do you put Purell on your hands when you're, what does that mean to you? One of the things that I think our audience should know in terms of their own advocacy for their own care is that as much as people talk a good game, unless you're willing to assert yourself and ask for the things you need, the system is not yet aligned to just hand it to you in anticipation of what you were going to ask them.
Right. So let's get back to the rest of these imbalances here. So we follow a script where the expectations are that they will play the role of the expert and they will ask you questions and you'll give the information that they need. And they're prepared. They know what to expect coming in. And we don't exactly, because it's not the thing that we do every day. And even if we're living with a chronic illness and we've been through this a lot, we still don't have the kind of understanding that they do. So when we come into this system, there is an unequal imbalance of respect and regard. They come in with the respect that we give to a professional. And we're a supplicant.
Yeah, but
and
they're not the Pope. I mean,
no,
it's not like
not.
You got an audience with the Queen or something.
But
I mean,
that is the implicit cultural expectation. And I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying it's there, and we need to be aware of it so that we can do something about it.
Yeah,
because it shouldn't be that way.
I agree. It's the right. Unfortunate reality is that we put these experts on a pedestal, and we somehow think that what moment of time or little scintilla of effort they put out on our behalf, we are privileged to have. And Unfortunately, you know, I've seen patients come in to get infusions, and they don't even know what drug they're going to get. They don't know what the side effects of that drug are. They don't know how it's going to change their lives, their behavior, their well-being. They don't know any of those things because, well, they didn't ask. Or if they did ask, they got the short answer. Is this drug going to be good for me? Yes. And then silence, right? Unless you learn to ask questions in a different way, you're going to get that one-word answer every time you ask a one-word answer question, because that's the most efficient. That was a great, you know, idea that you brought up about efficiency over effectiveness. Their efficiency is to say, yeah, sure, or yes, or no, and then move on. And if you don't ask the next question, well, why doesn't it do this, or why won't it help me this way, they're going to leave you with the yes or no answer.
Well, we have to understand that 50% of all physicians graduated in the lower half of their class.
I've heard that.
They're people, and they're fallible. There are a couple of other things that are really important that set up this dynamic that we walk into that we have to be aware of, because it pushes us, all of these dynamic issues, all these environmental issues, kind of push us implicitly into that victim role, into that status down role, and we have to be aware of that so that we can bring ourselves out of it. And one of those issues is that normally when we interact with people, there's a balance of intimacy. So in other words, as you get to know someone better, you'll try a test balloon and you'll share something that's a little more intimate about yourself, and then they will too. And we gradually proceed through this process of disclosure. But in this situation, the intimacy is all one way. They're asking really intimate questions about us, and that can be uncomfortable from our perspective. And we know that that's part of the process, but it still is uncomfortable. There's an imbalance in the stakes. So for me, as someone with a chronic illness, this is about my life or my quality of life. And for them, it's just a job.
Right.
And they know that the stakes are much higher for us. But still, they're thinking about, you know, what am I going to do with the next appointment? And how am I going to fit lunch in today? And yada, 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 all the things that everybody else thinks of when they're at work. And there's this imbalance of information. Because all that information tends to be flowing one way, and there's an imbalance of power.
Well, I think that's the nub right there.
Yes.
Right? It's not just there's a hierarchy. It's almost like there's an oppressive patriarchy, right? And I know in, you know, a lot of progressive thought these days, you know, we're all up against the oppressive patriarchy. Probably should have disclosed this a long time ago, but my daughter is a resident physician up at the Mayo Clinic, and when I went to her white coat ceremony when she got into med school, there was a woman who gave a talk welcoming the students into med school, and you know, all the med students get a short white coat. They don't get the long white coat that the doctors get, so they get this little short white coat, so it's called a white coat ceremony.
It's the same with academic robes.
Yeah, okay, yeah, same thing. I remember the woman saying, "Welcome to the men's club." And she said it tongue-in-cheek because she's a woman, of course, and, you know, but it is an old boys' club. We tend to defer to physicians as more than just a hierarchical icon, if you will, I think of more like an icon, that all physicians belong on that pedestal, and maybe so. And even the ones that graduated in the second half, you know, the bottom half of their 50% of their class. But I think it's what stunts the conversation between patients and their physician is that there's so much deference to their deified position that we don't deign to ask because we're lower on the hierarchy in this equation. And I guess that's what I'm hoping that folks today will take away from this podcast, is that with maintaining respect, which you can maintain, you can still ask difficult and tough questions and get the information you're looking for. And that's really, you know, my hope in this episode is that we encourage you. And we're not here just to talk about physicians because they're not the bad guys or gals in this equation. They're doing the best they can. As Kevin said, this is their job. They get up every day and they go to work and this is what they do. And they've got to get through that day, and they can't get emotionally attached to every patient that comes in. They can't be, you know, overtly compassionate and caring and over, you know, emotional about people that are coming in. However, there's a certain amount of conversation, dialogue, that you as a patient are entitled to have about what the doctor's thinking in regards to your treatment. And you have every right to ask, not demand necessarily, but say, "Doc, I need to understand this or that," right? So anyway, I interrupted your thought on that, but I really wanted to interject that, you know, it is a patriarchy.
Yeah,
and I think we can acknowledge that.
And that's a crucial point. By way of wrapping up this section, you know, I just want to emphasize that we do feel uncomfortable when we walk into this. There are a whole lot of external reasons. It's not, and we tend to internalize them and make it about us. I don't feel comfortable. I don't feel equal. I don't feel worthy of asking the questions. And it's not. What I'm saying is the system, the environment, is set up to put us in that position. And you talk about the white coat ceremony, that's part of it. We know this because of dozens of studies over decades. People treat physicians differently if they're not wearing that white coat.
Well, but interesting that you point that out, and I know we need to take a break, but I wanted to say that at the Mayo Clinic, The physicians all wear suits because in the past they were all men. And now with almost half the population of residents being women, they don't know what to do with them in terms of the dress code. Mm-hmm. Because they're walking around in effectively business attire in a clinical setting, and the patients and their caregivers and family don't know that they're physicians.
Right.
If you see a man in a suit walking through the halls of Mayo Clinic, you immediately identify that person as a physician. But the women have a greater struggle with that. So my daughter has told me the number of times that she's walked into a patient room and the patients will say, well, who are you?
Right.
Never making the assumption that she's the physician.
Well, we're going through a lot of cultural changes, and that's one of the reasons why we can even have this conversation right now, because our expectations as patients, because there have been so many voices in the past 20 years or so talking about patient advocacy issues, mm-hmm. and because if we look over the decades, not just in healthcare, but there's a general cultural movement toward reducing hierarchy. So all of these things create space for us to have this conversation, and we should. So, out of this section, I want people to understand that it is imbalanced, that the rewards aren't aligned, and all of that is inherently uncomfortable. And so your job is to flip the script, first by understanding this and by giving them what they need and making room for your needs in the time you have available. And that's not just with a physician, that's when you're on the phone with the insurance company and all those things. And then be firm, because this is an exchange and a negotiation. I know after the break we'll get into all of those sorts of issues.
We all have challenges. Mine is multiple sclerosis. We each have this one life, and we didn't choose to be saddled with chronic illness. But there's a better way. So I choose to Just Jump. And you can too. It's your life. Live it well. ChronicCal.com.
Welcome back. I'm here with Kevin Payne, and we're talking about how to advocate for yourself in the system that's, in some respects, out of balance between you and your provider and the insurance companies and all the different facets of the industry that you have to deal with once you've been diagnosed with a chronic condition. And the reason it's different, I think, for chronic conditions, and I say that, you know, exclusively because, as we've talked about in previous episodes, the system is really not set up to deal with chronic disease. It's really set up to deal with acute care. Hospitals are literally called acute care centers. Their emergency room feeds their inpatient care, or the physicians that they've hired that feed their inpatient care, and they're there to take care of you, solve your problem ostensibly, and then send you on your way. Well, when you have a recurring need because of a chronic condition for which there's no cure, the system really is not only misaligned or out of balance, but in some respects stacked against you. We talked a little bit about dealing with your physician and what's going through their heads and why they can't spend more time with you. So in this segment, let's talk a little bit about, in addition to how you deal with your doctor, how do you deal with the rest of the system that now becomes part of your daily routine in many respects? Let's talk about, Kevin, in dealing with your insurance company. Now, I know you've been through your own situation with your own MS, and of course, you know, as a caregiver for your wife and her cancer, and I'm sure personally you've had a lot of experience with this. Let's talk about how, you know, your journey was affected by the insurance companies. Did you have like a great experience with them? Did it do all the things for you that you were hoping it would do? And how did you get that? I mean, how did you advocate for yourself or your wife during the journeys that you've both been on or had been on?
Well, fortunately at the time, I had a job with really good coverage. And so we were fortunate in that way. Now, on the other hand, our insurance was literally, I mean, for me, a set of golden handcuffs, because back in that day, that was the only way you were getting insurance here in the U.S., basically, was through your employer. And so I stayed in a job, even though I wanted to branch out and become an entrepreneur, and did that for a number of years, because we needed the insurance coverage. And it wasn't just for me, it was more important, this, you know, more life-threatening condition that I was dealing with. That and you know, having young kids and needing to have health care for them as well. And fortunately, they were very healthy.
To accentuate your point, I don't think that's radically changed today. I think that's exactly the same that we're all dealing with. I know that, you know, you can go outside your employer or former employer to get health care coverage from healthcare.gov or whatever the Affordable Care Act plans are, and you can buy individual plans now or family plans, you know, on the open market. But there are a great number of people, and I work closely with the entrepreneurial community here in this metro area, and how many brilliant people who would love to go off and do something on their own just simply can't, because the cost of insurance is beyond their ability to afford it. I mean, yeah. I think a few years ago, my wife and I, as we were starting Infusion Express, and we didn't have corporate coverage at that point, we were paying almost $2,200 a month for our coverage for myself and my wife and our youngest daughter. Well, that's twice as much as many people's mortgage payment.
Right.
And I'm fortunate enough that I could afford it. But let me tell you, it was a stretch, a real stretch.
And you know, let me just say, I know we'll have future episodes about this topic, but that was and is still a big challenge for me, because, you know, working for myself, having my own company, I've got to also find ways to provide health care for myself, and I need it. And so a lot of people, that's just beyond their risk tolerance. They just won't do that. And me, I've got a crazy risk tolerance, or I wouldn't do it, but I like to jump out of planes, you know.
I think the bottom line here is that we need to find ways to ask for the care we believe we deserve. And if you don't believe you deserve good care, or the system is stacked against you that it's not going to give you good care or great care, then you're probably going to end up with less than great care. You know, the story we tell ourselves is we're not deserving, or we're not on the same par with these folks. We really can't ask these questions or don't ask these questions because we're too humble. We're somewhere down the hierarchy. We tell ourselves a lot of stories about why we don't deserve whatever it is we think we deserve. But we got to get past that, because the system is not going to be as compassionate as you hope it's going to be. It's not there to care for you in the way that you think of caring. It's there to provide whatever thing it provides on a production basis, efficiency basis. And if you don't stop and ask that system to help you, it's going to blow right by you. It's like standing alone at the train station. If you don't come out from the hut and wave that train down, it's just going to keep on going. And that's kind of how the healthcare system is.
Right. And that's where I think we should probably get back to that subtitle for this episode, with the way you framed it, victim versus warrior. And that's a frame that makes sense if you don't have a chronic illness, you know? And so cultural frames are important. Language is important. And we're more aware of that now. And some people still kind of question whether it is. But what we call things matters to people.
Yeah, I digress for 30 seconds. I just finished a book called The Four Agreements, and the last name of the writer, the author, is Ruiz, and I'm sorry, I can't remember his first name. But the Four Agreements talk about one. You know, the first agreement of the four is to be impeccable with your words.
Right.
And words matter. Language matters. And trying to be impeccable is difficult, but it's really important, I think, in this context of how you communicate.
It really is. And people will notice, if they listen to this podcast over time, I'm very precise in my language. And part of that is because I'm I spent so many years as an academic. So when I say chronic condition, I mean everything that is around the state of a chronic, you know, having that chronic diagnosis. When I say chronic illness, that means the experience of having the condition. When I say chronic disease, That's the medical criterion itself, and so forth. You know, when I say patient, I never say patient unless I'm talking about the role that we inhabit when we're in the healthcare system. Because to me, I'm not a patient, I'm a person with multiple sclerosis.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So the language is really important, and we have this set of behaviors that's associated with victimhood, okay? And let's talk about that end of the spectrum first. But when we're dealing with a chronic illness, it's kind of like trying to figure out a hypochondriac who's really sick, okay? So we have real external constraints on us. And sometimes that might put us at a disadvantage, and we're aware of that disadvantage. And maybe other people around us are aware of that disadvantage. And that can come off like victimhood, okay? But the important thing from our perspective is that we don't internalize the victim role.
Is that because we think of a condition or disease as weakening us, and that we become weaker, and as you don't want to be perceived as a weaker human being, or you think you're being perceived as a weaker person?
Yeah, a lot of it does have to do with all these expectations that surround the idea of being sick, and the fact that all of our stereotypes about sick are conditioned by those acute illnesses that we're used to. And so people get really surprised when we have a chronic illness, and sometimes they think it's kind of sketchy, and they think that maybe we're playing the system, because one day we'll appear to be acting really, really well, and then the next day we're begging off whatever it was we want to do, and they think, oh, well, it's just convenient for you. And it's like, no, what it means is this is something that I can't get over. I always have to deal with it. And on every day that I can act like I don't have it, I will.
Well, and also there are right. days when you feel good, right?
Right.
We talked about
exactly.
your plan A, B, and C.
Exactly.
I think those were great sort of stratifying your well-being on a given day or get a given period of time, is that you're not going to be perfect every day. You're not going to be executing plan A and jumping out of airplanes like you do on certain days, because why? You're in plan C day, right? I'm barely getting out of bed, and I got to get to the, you know, I got to get a shower or whatever. I got to go to a meeting, and I'm going to slog through this thing as best I can. So you're the expectation we have of ourselves, though. And it's like, you know, when you say, oh, he's a strapping young man, or he's, you know, he looks really healthy. Well, the minute you say, well, but he has a condition, mm-hmm. he has a disease, that weakens not only the individual from their own self view, I think, but then the view that everybody else has of them.
Yeah, and it's dehumanizing.
There you go. Yeah.
And so that's really important. And so it's really important to know that, you know, we're trying to negotiate that difference, get the accommodation that we need, but we don't want to live there in that spot. And it's also important as people who are interfacing with the healthcare system in whatever aspect, to understand what we were talking about in the previous segment, that the whole system is set up to be unequal. And that can leave us feeling victimized. But if we understand where it's coming from, then there are ways that we can deal with that, which we'll be getting to here, beyond what we've already talked about. So there's the other end of that spectrum then, right? There's that warrior perspective. This is something I feel really passionate about, because if you frame your life with a chronic illness as a battle with a monster of your condition or the monster of the system, you will lose. You will lose because it's bigger than you are, which is why I called my company Chronic Cow. People look at it like, what a goofy name for a company. And it's like, that's the point. Because it's not a monster, it's a cow. It's uncomfortable, it's big, it's bulky, it's smelly, it gets in the way, but you can handle a cow.
But it's reasonably domesticated, right? But again, though, I think that's, you know, in this book I'm reading, the Four Agreements, one of the things it talks about is the domestication of human beings, mm-hmm. right? And how our own stories and our own dreams have been, well, conscripted by the larger society or planet or whatever to become their dream. Right?
Certainly.
We're just part of a big mechanism. So when we get diagnosed with a chronic condition for which there's no cure, my feeling is that the story we start telling ourselves is that we're not as good as everybody else. We're weakened as compared to everybody else. And that the self-advocacy is something we're now doing from a position of, well, a lesser position, not the same position we were on before we were diagnosed. And I think that's, when I say, you know, we talk about victim versus warrior, I agree with you. I think being in warrior mode, you know, on tilt the whole time, you're going to become so stressed out at some point that you're not going to be able to deal with the stress now.
Right.
There's a methodology, I think, to advocating for yourself that I'd love to get into in the next segment so that we can give people sort of practical guidance on how to move forward with their ideas and their questions and their concerns about their condition and how they get the answers they need to live a good life, a high-quality life.
So before we get on to that topic, which is you know where we're going here, there's one more thing about that victim versus warrior that I want us to talk about. It's not just cultural. And that's one of the reasons why those roles are so powerful in our history. Those roles are rooted in deep in our biology, in our threat response, in our perceived threat or fear. So we talk about this fight or flight response that we have, and it always kind of bugs me that we talk about it in terms of fight or flight, because really, honest to goodness, it's freeze, flight, fight, fawn, fright, faint.
It's a bunch of Fs.
Yeah, there's six of them there. And they usually happen in that order. And don't worry, we're going to do a whole episode about this down the line. So we will get back to it. But my point is that the fight and the fawn responses are the roots of our warrior and our victim roles. And so those are really deep and they're really powerful and they affect us at a biological and an emotional level. And we want to keep out of those extremes when we're interfacing with the healthcare system. We want to be firm. We want to be implacable. We want to be immovable. We want to get what we want. But we want to keep out of those emotionally driven extremes because A, they don't help the interaction, and B, they just are stressful for us. I know we'll get into some practical techniques here after the break.
On this topic of chronic disease management and navigating the system, a very nice lady I met a few weeks ago named Caressa Hutchinson has a company called Modern Health. Modern Health, M-O-D-R-N, health.com. They're creating an app, and I believe there's a beta version available or early version available for navigating the healthcare system. Once you've been diagnosed, you know, you're going to encounter all different aspects of the system, from labs and imaging to your physician to the insurance companies, pharmacies, and everybody else. And they kind of bring it all together in one place and help you move from step to step to step so that it isn't quite as daunting a puzzle as it appears to be when you have to go find the pieces yourself. So they're just helping you piece together a very complex puzzle. So check it out, Modern Health, M-O-D-R-N, health.com. So we're back, and this is Don Peterson. I'm here with Kevin Payne, and we're talking about self-advocacy. And we've been through some of the topic about, you know, why we feel the way we do, why the system is stacked against us, and the imbalance that exists. And we've talked a little bit about, you know, why we feel the way we feel and why through our humility, our desire not to be a pain in the butt, you know, we kind of just take it as it comes and we don't really dive deeper into the questions that we really painfully want to get answers to. We're just not sure how to ask or who to ask. You know, we talked about efficiency versus effectiveness, and I think that, you know, Kevin made a great point about this is their job. This is going to work every day. They've got kids and other things to think about. You and your problem is just part of their, well, the production of their day. You can't really fault them for not getting personally involved with you because they have to do this day in and day out. But what I'd like to talk about now is, you know, what kinds of things that we've talked about relate to actionable, effective ways to then get those questions out, to get the answers that you need. And one of the techniques I want to talk about is like we do in negotiating in business. the tendency we all have is to ask questions that have a finite answer, a yes or no answer. May I have this? Are you willing to pay that? And all you get is a yes or a no. Instead of saying, well, at what price would you be comfortable, and let the respondent talk, we give them, well, basically a multiple choice or a true and false question, right? And we all know from our time in school that we would all much prefer to have multiple choice or true or false questions. When they ask those questions that you have to write a long narrative for, those are the ones that we were all going, oh, man, I don't want to do that question. Oh, God, I hate that part, right?
I liked those.
Yeah.
I liked them.
Yeah, well, you did. You have the...
I'm the weirdo.
You're a weirdo. Okay, right. We'll go there. But I think for most of us who really just had to get through that test, we would have preferred all true and false, because we're going to get a 50% regardless, right? Even if we just randomly answer the questions. And in multiple choice, if there's only four or five, you pick B or the longest answer, and you probably have a 50% chance of getting that right. But when you're talking to your physician, one of the things I would advocate for you is... How do we ask open-ended questions, and what techniques can we use? I don't know how many times I'm sure you've been to your doctor too many times, more than you want to think about. How many times have you left entirely satisfied with all the answers that you were provided or the information that you got? How many times did you feel like you got your money's worth out of that visit? And when I think about money's worth, we were talking about this earlier, about how long they keep you waiting, right? And how they really don't feel your pain of having to wait an hour, 2 hours, or whatever, because they're behind. While your appointment was at, say, 9 a.m., they were behind so much that you waited till almost 10 o'clock to get your appointment. Why? Well, because somebody along the way, between 8 a.m. or whenever they started first seeing patients and now your appointment time, somebody got their attention for longer than they anticipated. And sometimes it's an acute problem and they're there to take care of that. But many times it's because they have a patient who had more questions that took longer to answer. And what I guess I'm advocating for you all is to be that patient, the one who gets more of the physician's time by asking questions the right way. Why do we tend to give people true or false answer or questions that have a true or false or multiple choice ending as opposed to the long narrative questions? Because we don't like those questions ourselves?
Humans like simple. We like closure. We like getting something done, checking it off, and moving on to the next thing. This is actually something I've spent years training people to do, and it's how do you do a data gathering or a diagnostic interview? Now, what you have to realize walking into this is not a conversation. Conversations have all these implicit norms. They're norms of turn-taking and the ways that we communicate information. It's about building rapport. That's not what this is about. From their perspective, it is a data-gathering interview. For a physician or nurse practitioner, they might look at it as a diagnostic interview, which is kind of a subset of that. So if you want to get the most out of this, and if you want to develop a good relationship, and I don't mean like, you're going to hug each other and sing kumbaya and walk off into the sunset together with the person working for the insurance company on the other end of the phone line. But what I'm saying is you've got a couple of goals. One, you want to give them the information that they need to efficiently do their job, because that's going to do two things. It's going to dispose them to be more positive to you, and it's going to free up some more time in the interaction for you to insistently ask your questions and get answers to them. See what I mean?
Well, I love that word, insistently. Because I think that's probably as much a key to getting the information you need as it is asking the question the right way. If you insist, if you persist in getting that information and claiming a right to know that information, doc, I need to understand, why are we on this drug? Why are you putting me on? What effect is it going to have on me? Right? Will it make me feel better? In what ways will I feel better? Do I wait until I'm symptomatic to take it again? Or is this preventative so that I take it ahead of time before I get sick? it's frustrating for me when I talk to patients who would come in at Infusion Express, and they wouldn't even know what drug they were getting. They would have no idea what the side effects of that drug would be. We had to provide some of that educational material, but that's without knowing the patient's full history. The physician has that history, and when they prescribe that drug, it's based on their total evaluation of you, not just this acute problem or this chronic disease. And maybe it's the therapy of choice for people with that particular condition. But in your case, like you're on Rebif for your MS, I know plenty of people are on Tysabri. There's some new biologics, Ocrevus and Lemtrada, and they're for different versions of MS, and we talked about that. You know, I'm not sure that everybody even has MS even knows why they're getting a different therapy.
Definitely. This is one of the most important points that we can make. You've got to be a prepared patient walking in. They're already prepared. It's their job. They know what they're going to be doing. Mm-hmm. You need to be prepared. One, because you need to know, here are the questions that I have, the things that I need answered, and you're going to write them down, and you're going to bring that in with you, and you're going to be able to talk about them. And that does two things. One, that makes sure that you stay on your script and that you get your things done. But two, if you want to be respected by the medical professionals or by people in the support healthcare community, you need to behave in a way that they can respect so that you demonstrate you are a prepared patient that takes this seriously. See what I mean?
No, I think that's a great point. I guess the question I'm thinking of in my head as you're talking about that is, how do I best prepare myself then? You know, I'm not certainly going to go to med school between now and the next visit with my doctor and get up to speed to the point that he or she is going to be. And I also know that from experience, personal and otherwise, that when you go in and say, well, doc, I found this on Google, they look at you cross-eyed like, well, why did you waste your time? And yet, how do we go in and advocate for ourselves with this notion of, you know, credible information? How do we source that and come across in a credible way?
Let me give you a couple of examples here. And also I will add that, you know, with all of our episodes now, we're including downloadables. So don't just listen to us on the podcast app of your choice, but actually go to chroniclifepodcast.com and download the PDF and look at the links and the other materials that we have provided for you to as action steps, as practical tips and tools to put this into action in your own life. So you need to know a couple of things. One, there's a standard diagnostic interview that they're always interested in.
Yep.
And we'll actually include links to a couple of good versions of that.
It's called a SOAP note. I forget exactly what SOAP stands for, but it's SOAP, S-O-A-P, and it stands for four things, and I forget what they are, but yeah.
And it will vary slightly depending upon your condition and the specialist that you may be going to, but this gives you a really good place to start. So you need to think about how you would answer those questions. Also, you need to look up the symptoms of your condition because they're going to be asking you questions about which symptoms you are experiencing or not. You need to look up your treatments and the side effects that are potentially associated with those treatments so that you can give them the information that they want. Because what you have to understand is whoever you're dealing with in the healthcare system, you're dealing with them for a functional reason. They need to get something done in relation to your case. And it may be a medical professional, it may be an insurance person, whoever it is. They need to get something done. They're looking to you for information they need to fill in the blank so that they can get through their decision tree, right? You need to be able to do that. You have to spend some time beforehand understanding that. You have to spend some time looking through, okay, so this is the kind of thing I'm experiencing, this is the kind of thing I'm experiencing, and be able to communicate those. And then you have to have your own questions written down.
So I mentioned SOAP notes, and I recall exactly what they stand for, and I think that the S part of it and the O part of it is something that every patient could do before they go in and see their physician. So the S stands for subjective. So kind of how do you feel, right? Like we talked about pain on a scale of what is your pain or your discomfort or whatever it is. That's your sort of sense of well-being. The O part is the objective side of it, and that's your lab values and how your wound's doing, if you have a wound or whatever it is. I mean, very specific factual data about your condition and whatever notes you make about that. And then I think the A is assessment. So based on the subjective and objective information, how do we assess your condition at this point? And then the P is your plan of care. What are we doing about it? So if you think about it from that perspective, a physician has this framework for creating a SOAP note every time they encounter you: subjective, objective, assessment, and plan. If you think about it in those four, in the framework of those four things, I think you can go in better prepared, and then you can ask about, okay, doctor, based on my subjective and objective communications to you, how do you assess me?
Right.
What's your assessment of that? And then, based on that assessment, doc, what's your plan for me?
Right.
Right?
So this is really crucial. If you want to equalize that relationship somewhat and be treated with more respect, then you need to go into it offering the kinds of things that they can respect will help them do their job.
Yeah.
And that's whatever kind of professional you're dealing with. Right? So you need to know those things. You need to be clear about the outcome you need. We get to that assessment and that plan. You say, okay, doc, I'm having this kind of pain, or doc, I can't sleep, or whatever it is. Or if you're dealing with your insurance company, you're saying, all right, I'm getting charged this much for this medicine, and it used to be something else. I need to understand why and figure out what we can do about that, right? So you're coming in with a clear objective. What are we doing? People are always looking for the easiest way through an interaction, right? And you want to give them the help they need to clearly get through this part of their professional day.
Yeah, but I think there's a balance. Again, we talked about balance a lot. You know, if you just waited 45 minutes to 2 hours to see this physician, and if you let things happen, you're going to get 3 to 5 minutes of that person's time. And the investment you just made is not going to feel like it paid off. And so my view is that, you know, you've got to not only come prepared with information about your condition, but you need to come prepared with the questions that you have. We never ask, right? Or we just tend not to ask, is, hey, doc, how many times or how many patients do you have a condition like mine?
Right.
Right? And what have you been doing or what have you done that's proven to be most successful for those patients? So not only have you had the experience of encountering people, but you've had the success rate of solving their problem. And we don't ask that. We really don't. I mean, you know, well, I've seen thousands of people with this disease. Really? So how many have you cured? We never asked that question. Of course, in a chronic disease with no cure, we know scientifically they can't say they cured it. But they could say, well, I have found that with people on this therapy or on these drugs, that they report a higher quality of life as a result of that. And look, as a chronic, with a chronic condition, that's all you really want, right? Like you want more Plan A days and way fewer Plan C days, right? And so whatever therapy can get you to that point most effectively, that's what you want. Now, let's say you've got your doctor talking in the way you need your doctor to talk, and now you're up against your insurance company, right? Because you want a particular therapy, and maybe the doctor would say, you know, that's really the right therapy for you, but I'm not sure your insurance is going to approve it. I'm not sure you're eligible for that drug. Then you've got to go. And I don't know. I know you don't like the word warrior because it puts you into a state that you don't want to be in very long. But now you have to, quote unquote, go fight with your insurance company.
Well, I'm not saying it's not necessary occasionally.
Well, I don't think anything is ever absolute in any form. But I do think that there are going to be times when you have to fight for what is right for you. And what people don't know, and I've learned this in the course of what I've been doing, with Infusion Express and what I'm doing in, for a future project I'm working on, is that there are appeals boards. So if you are deemed to be ineligible by your insurance right. company, there are state, because all insurances are regulated by the state, right? And of course, there's always this debate about my insurance company is practicing medicine by telling me I can't have a specific therapy that my doctor would prefer I was on, but my insurance company won't let me? How is that possible, right? You're incredulous, but understand that insurance companies have medical directors who are MDs, and they're weighing all the information in the journal articles and all the other literature that's out there and making a determination based on your, ostensibly based on your case, although it's been proven pretty solidly that these medical directors are not reviewing every case. They just have a checkbox full of things and say, well, if you haven't done this or tried that, I'm sorry, you can't have the next drug. You have to fail on these other ones first. But that's called step therapy, where you have to step through a series of different pharmaceutical therapies before you can get to the one you may really need. And the insurance is going to put you through that, even if your condition worsens over the course of those right. failures. So I think that, you know, advocating for yourself, making a plan to go in and talk to your physician, that's one aspect of it. But you also have to plan to deal with the insurance company who is going to weigh in on decisions you and your doctor will make.
Certainly. Part of this issue here that I really want to emphasize is that, and it has to do with the being firm, the being implacable, and that is...
persistence.
Well, telegraph it. I mean, up front, what you're saying when you get into an interaction, whether it's with a physician or an insurance company or whoever it is, you're going to say, this is the outcome I need out of this. And there's only one way out of this. I will be persistent. I will get what I need out of this. I'm going to do everything I can to help you and give you the information you need and demonstrate that I'm a responsible patient. But you mark my words, there's only one way out of this.
Yeah,
and
no,
that's the way that I need.
I've done that. I've called insurances on behalf of patients and also on my own behalf and my wife's. And I've said to them right from the outset, I'm going to keep calling back until I get what I need.
Right.
So
and
you
I
can shove
too.
Me off. Yeah. You know, you can, well, I'll have you talk to a manager. Okay, give me the
that's
manager.
Fine. Give
the manager.
Give it to me now.
I'm going to keep on calling and I'm going to keep dogging you people till I get what I need.
Right.
And you telegraph, I agree with you 100%. You telegraph that right up front. That's not being mean or disrespectful.
No.
That's not.
No.
I think that anybody,
at all. Not at all.
No matter how, you know, introverted you might be or shy, you can signal that and say that right up front. I'm going to keep calling back till I get what I need.
Yeah. You're saying, look, this is a job for you, and I understand that.
Yeah.
But this is my life, and this is what I need, and you're going to help me get that. And, oh, by the way, I'm going to help you help me get there, right? I'm not going to make this any more difficult than it has to be. But you have to understand, if you're going to escalate me to somebody else or they're going to escalate me to somebody else, you might as well just go ahead and do that right now and save us both the trouble.
Right. I agree. Just let's get me there right now. I remember one I had with...
And I've done that before.
I remember one I had with Cigna where they kept passing me to... It had to go to the pharmacy department. Then it had to go back to the major medical department. Then it had to go back to the medical director. And it literally took almost 4 months to resolve a problem for a particular patient. But we did get it solved, and I signaled right up front, I am going to keep calling you back until this is resolved.
Yeah.
And I did. And I stayed on hold a long time.
Right.
I can tell you, I spent a lot of time with them on the speakerphone listening to really bad music, but I was willing to do it
because that's
the only way to get to them, because they want you to hang up.
Right.
They put you on hold and leave you there for as long as they do because they expect you to hang up.
Right. They know they've run the statistical models.
Right.
They know that a certain percentage is going to drop off and that will improve the bottom line a certain amount.
It's called a planned hold.
Exactly.
It literally has a name,
yes,
a planned hold. So
yes.
If you get on the phone and you sit on hold for 30 minutes, that's the plan.
Yes.
Because they know that most people hang up after 25 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever the number is.
Right.
They know that.
So
you're
I
right.
always, whenever I know I have to do that, I always have something else to work on. And I will put it on speaker, or I will put it, you know, put an earphone in, and I will go ahead and do the other thing that I have because I'm not wasting my time with it. But yeah, buddy, I can wait you out.
And it's the bad on hold music that drives me the most crazy.
And
I think it's designed to do that.
And there are a couple of companies who shall remain nameless who are even worse about it. Who have bad quality recordings, and they've only paid for like one or two songs, and they keep looping, and you just want to climb through the line and choke the living snot out of them.
Yeah, or the really worst one is when they have the staticky kind of radio station that isn't quite tuned in properly, and you hear the staticky, and it kind of cuts in and out. It really is about not having to talk to you. The efficiency you talked about is if I talk to fewer people today, I'll get more done.
Exactly. So by way of wrapping up this segment, I want to reemphasize that there are cool downloadables on the site that will help you through this. We want to emphasize that you can be firm without slipping into the warrior role all the time. And there are good reasons for the inequality to sort of drive you into the victim role, but you can resist that in ways as well. And so be prepared and be firm and let them know that this is Thunderdome. This is, you know, this is two people enter, one's going to leave, and we're going to leave through the door I need.
It's a cage match.
Because it's my life. Because it's my life. But I'm going to be sweet about it. As my grandmother used to say, just be sweet with it.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife says, you'll get more flies with honey than whatever vinegar. The other thing is. Mm-hmm. Vinegar.
Yep.
But I have a tendency to go right to the vinegar.
And I've had to learn not to do that. So after the break, we'll wrap this up and give you a couple more things to do.
Well, Kevin, I think this has been a really interesting episode. I hope that you, the audience, had a chance to make some notes about the kinds of things that you can do yourselves to be more assertive, to carry on a conversation, an exchange of information with your physicians and other caregivers and the system that you're dealing with. This is an area that's near and dear to my heart. I believe that the system is stacked against you, and you really do have to persist and insist that you get what you need.
Yeah, and I just want to emphasize that even though there are structural, environmental things pushing us in that direction, you don't have to feel like a victim. And you don't always have to go into full beast mode warrior in order to get things done. What we're trying to advocate for here is you being clear, you communicating, you being a responsible participant in your coverage so that they're more likely to respect you, you making it easier for them to do what they need to do, but also upfront letting them know that you are the immovable object. You will get what you need out of this because for you, the stakes are a lot higher. I mean, really, for them, it's just a job. Once more, this is Dr. Kevin Payne here with Don Peterson, and we've been the Chronic Life Podcast, encouraging you in your journey of self-advocacy, and we want you to be involved in the conversation. So please find us at Chronic Life Pod on social, so that's on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and go to chroniclifepodcast.com to get the downloadable to give you some tools and some ideas that will help you be a better advocate for yourself as you continue your journey through the chronic health system. Next time on the Chronic Life Podcast, we'll be talking about the ways that life with a chronic illness, either diagnosed or caregiver, can really erode the foundations of your most cherished relationships. So until next time, go forth, do well, be well, and do good.